Tuesday, April 17, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So over the last couple of days, we have seen the complete deconstruction of the manufactured lies in Syria. While the Q crowd have their own fairy tale they're weaving, which makes this atrociously illegal act a 4D chess move, that's good for America somehow, as they typically do with anything that seems to reveal the truth about Trump and the current U.S. government. They say this was apparently a strike against the deep state, a term I'm increasingly beginning to think they do not understand, as this was surely a boon for the military-industrial complex, one faction of the multifaceted idea that is the deep state, and not the Democrats. So in saying it was a strike against the deep state, yet clearly helped the military-industrial complex, there's a glaring contradiction there. Yet they say this was an attack on the deep state in Syria, and apparently not a cancer research facility that was bombed, of which we have on-the-ground evidence to support. Something Eva Bartlett also pointed out in our recent interview, as opposed to the chemical weapons factory the U.S. claims was bombed. And both Eva and Partisan Girl from YouTube make two excellent points in this regard. First, if a chemical weapons factory had been bombed, that would have been both horribly destructive to the very city the U.S. claimed to be fighting for, killing untold civilians as the supposed chemical weapons would have been released due to the bombing, and that it would have destroyed any chance of proving these existed to begin with, which would have supported their claims. Second, that they claim they took out Assad's supposed chemical weapons capabilities in this attack, and the Pentagon claims they didn't miss a shot. Every shot hit its target, and then turn around and warn that if Assad uses chemical weapons again, that they're ready to strike. Wait, didn't they just say they took out his chemical weapons capabilities? Clearly, just setting up the next false flag. The point being that there were no chemical weapons, as the OPCW previously verified that the U.S. did not bomb a chemical weapons factory. It bombed a cancer research facility, which is horrendously cruel, seeing as how the U.S. sanctions are not allowing these types of medicines into the country. And now the Syrian people are even worse off than before in this regard. We now have three well-respected and highly credible groups on the ground on the site of the alleged attack, showing us that no such chemical attack ever took place and that all the locals and doctors who were there support that claim. We have Vanessa Beely on the ground who was there during the attacks. We have a recent OAN on-the-ground report and even a journalist for the mainstream outlet The Independent, Robert Fisk, on the ground as well, all countering the mainstream narrative with exactly the type of source testimony and documentable evidence that neither the mainstream media nor the US, French, or UK governments have produced. Yet they all maintain certainty in the face of such obvious proof to the contrary. Which is why none of this is anywhere in the mainstream coverage today. And I believe many of the recent headline stories are being used to distract you, as usual. And we should also not dismiss the possibility that any of them could have been created or manufactured in order to draw attention away from yet another horribly botched false flag in Syria. Now, that's clearly my opinion. I don't want anyone to run with that saying I'm claiming these stories are being manufactured. Just coming off of a story we've seen as clearly manufactured, we always have to consider that any of these stories that I'm about to quickly go over are either being pushed to the forefront in disingenuously to cover other things, or are very well being created to keep our attention away from the fact that they're very well, they're clearly lying in this regard. So the first one is simply one that the story about Hannity that's all over, and that's something that is clearly a he said, she said, you know, just it seems like a very petty story to be covering everything else that's going on that's very important. We have a story about Starbucks shutting down 8,000 stores for racial bias training. And we have a story about Comey's book and the reactions to it. I mean, these stories are clearly just inconsequential when considering all the other bigger things going on. And we also have a big story today about an engine exploding in a Southwest airplane. Now, this one is clearly important. I mean, this is newsworthy. This is something that's very terrible. Apparently, somebody died, and it's something that's very much worth covering. But it's a very clearly a front page story in almost all of the mainstream news stations, which, again, it's very worthy of covering. But with all that's coming out about what just happened, when a very big event that just happened in Syria and a lot of the information being completely debunked and from other mainstream people at in addition to plenty of other independent sources that have been doing it for a while. But the point is, this story is being pushed up front. And I think that's disingenuous. I mean, and I don't want to suggest that was some kind of manufactured event, but it's certainly possible with everything else we've seen. Now, That aside, just assuming that all these are real stories, the real point is that they're pushing them in front and covering these as opposed to what's really going on. And the fact that their entire serious story is being completely thrown out the window. And then we understand that we literally, the United States, literally just carried out an open attack on a sovereign nation based on the stories that are now being shown to be false. Exactly like Iraq and WMD, something that shouldn't surprise any of us. But clearly, this is what's going on. So let's get into the stories for today. First one coming from ZeroHedge.com. Famed war reporter Robert Fisk reaches Syrian, quote, chemical attack site, concludes they were not gassed. Journalist for the UK's Independent, Robert Fisk, is the first Western journalist to reach and report from the site of the alleged chemical weapons attack, widely blamed on Assad's forces. And his coverage has shattered the mainstream narrative, being unanimously parroted, coming directly from government officials and being completely unchallenged. Which, by the way, is the primary job of genuine news outlets, to investigate, dissect, and challenge, if necessary, the government claims. Yet that has somehow now been manipulated into being un-American, as if questioning the very officials who lied about Iraq, Libya, Yemen, and on is somehow anti-American. It's smart and has been effective, but is very devious and deceptive to those who still believe they can trust the mainstream media. They just parrot what they're told to report by the government. Now, it's also important to note that this being from a mainstream reporter, which doesn't, again, we should never reflexively dismiss or trust anything, but we should apply the same kind of skepticism we do to any stories we read. And the fact that it's coming from the Independent, to me at least, gives me a little bit of a twinge, like, maybe what are they trying to do here? But nonetheless, we should take it as it is and, you know, apply the same kind of critical thinking and skepticism we do to anything else. Now, Fisk found no evidence of mass chemical attack, but he's encountered multiple local eyewitnesses who experienced the chaos of that night, but who say the gas never happened, point blank. It was all due to smoke inhalation, and the gas claim was spread by people who ran in to elicit fear. But every doctor who was there when this went down, whose names are included in the article itself, which always I'll have in the show notes, which you should absolutely read, and not some nameless, faceless activists or terrorist-linked organizations. And they all agree there was no chemical attack. Now, they make the clear point there that the video itself was genuine. The people were shooting it. It really did happen. But the doctors are openly stating that the people that they saw, the very people in that room, by the way, did not have any signs of chemical weapons attack or inhalation of a chemical chlorine gas or anything. It was all smoke inhalation. And the fact that they were all the pictures of kids with the things on their chests and the inhalers and whatever else was all being done by these people who ran in screaming chemical attack, clearly to elicit the kind of reaction we saw, knowing now that was not the case. The doctors there have confirmed that. That's very important. Now, Fisk is among the most recognizable name in the past four decades of Middle East war reporting, having twice won the British Press Awards Journalist of the Year prize and a seven-time winner of the British Press Awards Foreign Correspondent of the Year. The New York Times has referred to him as, quote, probably the most famous foreign correspondent in Britain, while The Guardian has called him one of the most famous journalists in the world. And yet he's here completely countering everything they've been saying. So it's very interesting to see this take place. I mean, even this report aside, this is what we've been saying from the beginning, based on other people on the ground, like Vanessa Beely and other types of investigations and videos we've seen from the doctors and Russians coming out and showing us their evidence right off the bat, which oddly the other governments haven't done. But this aligns right with it. So it either makes me ask why the Independent is trying to accomplish this or why they're countering everybody else. And I'm interested to see the response by these other mainstream outlets, because clearly they could, you know, if they come out and call him some kind of Russian spy or, you know, whatever they usually do, it's going to counter everything they've been saying about him thus far. So it'd be very interesting to see. But again, with any claim, we should be skeptical, but this is interesting to see it perfectly align with what we've been saying from the beginning. Now, it's, again, the main point here for me is that all the locals they interviewed are saying that that didn't take place, that there's no chemical attack. But all the reports we're getting from supposed locals are actually coming from Turkey, where these refugees are supposedly came from Douma. Now, that's interesting, because clearly that can be manipulated. We've talked about refugees and that kind of story before. But how easy would it be to put people in place to able to go and touch base with CNN, who was there, to make these kind of claims? And we have another ridiculous, a shockingly ridiculous segment from CNN, interviewing these kind of people, where it's kind of become famous at this point, where the journalist is apparently sniffing a backpack and saying, oh yeah, that smells, something smells weird there. It kind of stings, or whatever she said. I'm paraphrasing. But it's just absurd to think she's smelling a supposedly sarin chlorine gas laced backpack and saying, oh yeah, I can kind of sense that. And talking to different refugees and people. I mean, it's an absolutely, like I said, shockingly ridiculous coverage. But that just shows you how easily people are manipulated today. And it just, this whole story is beginning to completely disintegrate right in front of us. And we know that not only the government officials, but CNN, I mean, CNN is one of the worst culprits, but all mainstream media are pretty notorious for this. But CNN has been caught multiple times manipulating stories and straight out manufacturing coverage. We have evidence of them literally doing it on a stage with fake things behind them saying they were in Saudi Arabia. I mean, these are things that are almost well known at this point. So why we would trust their coverage in this regard is beyond me.
The possible threat would be over because it is now morning there. It's what, well, just after 6 o'clock in the morning?
The whole thing is everyone assumed that the threat would be over because it was early morning. But the thing about Saddam Hussein is that he has never done the expected. And right now we have, once again, been surprised with the unexpected, an air raid, an apparent attack, although we can't say what the outgoing missiles hit, at approximately 20 after 7 in the morning Saudi Arabian time. All the other in Saudi Arabia. CNN's Carl Rochelle is here with me. He just came up. Carl, I know we can't be very specific given these restrictions, but within those parameters, what did you see?
Well, what I saw, I didn't see anything hit. I looked almost straight above us. There is a vapor trail coming from my right to my left, and there's a cloud of something. It looks like it might have been an explosion, a cloud, my apologies for that.
He's putting on a gas mask. There hasn't been any gas dropped here that we could tell.
You smell anything?
No.
And it's important to see that no other mainstream outlets are covering Robert's coverage of what happened in Syria, which is interesting because he's got an amazing reputation, and just the fact that they're just ignoring it says something. And also we should understand that the claims that Robert Fisk is completely dismantling are the ones that were used to openly attack Syria, which is absolutely mind-boggling when you realize that it was based on a lie. I mean, to a lot of us, that's not very surprising. But now that we're seeing evidence of it, and the things that we've been saying from the beginning, it becomes, I mean, it's a war crime. I mean, that's what it really comes down to. That's absolutely shocking to see. But it's important to keep this all as the story moves forward and keep an open mind in everything. Moving on to the next story coming from Medium.com, written by Caitlin Johnstone. U.S. Russia hacked the evidence of a chemical attack in Syria. As Fisk reported, this was dust and smoke inhalation, not gas, but this article addresses a very embarrassing claim made by the U.S., clearly in preparation for its lies being exposed like we're seeing. And they are literally stepping out ahead of their own narrative here and saying, well, even if nothing is found, that will be because Russia tampered with the evidence. As the author herself writes, we are now being told, I assure you I'm not making this up, that if the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons doesn't find evidence that the Syrian government conducted a chemical weapons attack in Delma last week, it's because Russia hid the evidence. Quote, it's our understanding the Russians may have visited the attack site, reports U.S. Ambassador Kenneth Ward. Quote, it is our concern that they may have tampered with the intent of thwarting the efforts of the OPCW fact-finding mission to conduct an effective investigation. Now, again, obviously, that's entirely possible. I mean, we should never discount anything, but the point is that it's not a secret. The Russians were very clearly, they announced the fact that they did an investigation. They showed you what they found. They showed you that they talked to the doctors on the ground, which is something that, of course, anything can be manipulated, but we have multiple reports showing you these doctors and people on the ground saying it didn't happen. So it's interesting they come out with this, making it like some bombshell claim that we believe that they were there first, and clearly we know that's the case. But this is clearly meant to establish a counter narrative knowing that their lies were about to be exposed. That's at least how I see it. As always, come to your own conclusions in this regard, but I think it's pretty clear here. Yeah, we also have Vanessa Bealey, who was on the ground when this attack was carried out, and confirms that no gas took place, and also has, that's also a report that I'll have in the show notes, but she has some interesting claims about no bombs were seen. There were explosions. So, I mean, who knows? I've seen floating claims that there was no attack and that it was kind of all a manipulation, which I'm not leaning that way, but who knows? Anything's possible. But again, all of this stuff is completely countering the U.S. narrative. And it's interesting to see them come out ahead of time and be like, oh, well, if they find nothing, here's why. It's just clearly they're trying to cover their tracks. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com. Israel launches airstrikes on airbase near Homs in Syria. The Syrian military announced at approximately 1:10 a.m. local time that the Israeli Air Force fired several missiles toward the Shayrat base and its surrounding areas in the Homs. According to the statement, the Syrian air defense managed to intercept several of the missiles, but there was no mention as to whether or not the Israelis scored any direct hits. The attack by Israel marks the second time in 7 days that they have targeted the eastern countryside of Homs. Now, this is actually now the third open attack that Syria from Israel. And I find this very revealing. I mean, for many different reasons. First of all, it's not getting covered in any way. But it's interesting to see this because people have denied that these attacks have even happened. And this is very clearly that something that's ongoing. And it's not really getting addressed. But it's clearly in their mind attacking Iran. I mean, that's kind of the point. They've openly talked about that. They even came right out of the gate. And again, that's another point I should make. Clearly, this is exactly what I said. When they came out of the gate and said, oh, well, Iran is still a threat there. They commended the U.S. on their attacks and but Iran is still a threat. Clearly, like I said, it was a way of setting up the fact that they knew they were going to just continue to attack and wanted to kind of say, oh, good job, U.S., but, you know, it's also good when we do it. You know, that's kind of what they were doing there. Well, clearly, this is what's happening. I doubt this is the last attack we're going to see. It's very interesting to see this play out, which leads perfectly to the next story, also from Zero Hedge. Quote, it was the first time we attacked live Iranian targets, Israel admits, striking Iran base in Syria. And this is coming directly from Israeli military officials. And again, the admission there validates accusations by Russia and Syria that were up until now unconfirmed and that many people were denying were even taking place. So it's very interesting to see them come right out and say that. There's been social media all over saying, oh, this is fake news and whatever else. Clearly it's happening and clearly it's getting absolutely no coverage. And that's the point that I keep dwelling on. It's getting essentially zero coverage by mainstream media. And clearly this is in line with the actions the U.S. just took, yet it's being completely ignored. Right. And so that has to show us something there. I mean, I don't want to try to guess what the reasoning is behind that, but clearly either they don't want us to realize it's happening or it's hypocrisy at its finest where they're saying, look, we'll focus on when these people do something bad, but when it's Israel, we won't even look at it. Again, it's just very interesting. So again, I highly doubt this is the end of it, but it should show you that these are open war crimes, especially knowing that we just showed you that the whole premise this is all based on is a complete fabrication. So that's alarming to see, and it's something we should be stopping. We should be standing up and saying, that's not okay to Israel, but that's not going to happen because the U.S. clearly just took the same action. Very interesting. Moving on to the next story coming from antimedia.com, North and South Korea in talks to officially end Korean War, coming from a report. Now, this is an anonymous South Korean diplomatic official who apparently spoke to a South Korean newspaper and reported that the neighboring countries are right now hashing out a statement that could officially bring the war to an end later this month. Apparently, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and South Korean leader President Moon are set to meet in person for the first time. Now, this groundbreaking report comes as Kim is increasingly expressing his willingness to discuss denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, an openness that foreign policy experts have attributed to South Koreans, quote, masterful diplomacy and not Donald Trump's fire and fury threats and warmongering. And I think that's a very important point to make there because it's always been trumpeted that all of this is due to Donald Trump's threats and he's a mastermind in all of this and really showing you that the threats have worked. And that's not what's happening. I mean, clearly every time we've seen this kind of aggression, the North Koreans have responded in kind. And that's not that we, I mean, again, I mean, you could make your own opinions here, but my opinion clearly based on the facts at hand are the opposite, that every time he threatens them, they do something just as worse and just as bad. And they use that act to continue to threaten them. It's an ongoing cycle. But so ultimately what we're seeing here is that due to South Korea's efforts to try to find peace, which they've wanted from the very beginning, and the U.S. has constantly stepped in and screwed it up in a very simplified explanation. And again, all kinds of notes for you to check out because that's what's happened up until now. The Olympics are a perfect example. Just very childish kind of petty actions stopping any kind of peace they were trying to make. And in humorous and ridiculous fashion, Trump, clearly seeing that this was happening independent of U.S. attempts to hinder peace in any way possible, spoke out today and gave his blessing to both countries. And of course, right-leaning media is already underway trying to frame this as a win for Donald Trump, despite every action taken thus far has been an attempt to stop such de-escalations in any way. And so I just find this very humorous to see, even though we already know that's not the case, and everyone else everywhere, including South Korea, are basically saying that that's not the case. It's interesting to see this take place, but of course, he's going to try to grasp onto this and say, see, all of my threats worked. And we know that's not what's happening. But I really hope we see this come to pass, because peace between the Koreas would be a huge step in the right direction, because that's very clearly being used as kind of a stepping stone for U.S. trying to last grasp on trying to maintain control of geopolitics today. And really, because you know, the idea is that China is essentially continuing to rise in that regard, and North Korea is a stepping stone to stop that from happening. Moving on to the next story, coming from steamit.com, from author V4 Vapid, world-renowned humanitarian and founder of one of the largest children's charities in the world, Peter Dalglish, arrested on suspicion of pedophilia. This was also covered by the freethoughtproject.com. Last week, Peter John Dalglish, United Nations advisor and founder of the Street Kids International Charity, was arrested on suspicion of pedophilia at a home that he was staying at in Nepal. During the arrest, two young children, ages 12 and 14, were rescued from the home. Central Investigation Bureau of Nepal Police, a CIB, told Global News that Dalglish is being investigated for child sexual exploitation abuse. And this is a very shocking story. Not, I mean, it's not surprising. We've been covering this for a very long time. Ben Swan even did a recent kind of coverage story, not really touching on pedophilia or child sexual abuse, but making the claim that these kind of foreign aids and charities are often used for manipulative purposes and not at all what they seem. And we've covered this from Oxfam and these different cases where charities are covers for this exact kind of thing, even human trafficking. And this is not some conspiracy theory. This is verifiable information. Oxfam just had a huge scandal. And even the United Nations, that's the other interesting point, that he is apparently United Nations advisor. And we've talked about the United Nations peacekeepers and the bevy of claims we've seen from rape and child molestation and all kinds of different things, even human trafficking, through peacekeepers of the UN. And no one ever gets in trouble for it. That's the other interesting point. So that connection, I think, is very important. But to see this yet again from one of the largest charities in the world, that he is openly, basically, and if they found two children in his house, I mean, we just have to begin to realize what's going on here, and that these people work their way into these positions and in order to manipulate. Actually, the article on the Free Thought Project makes an excellent point on highlighting people in the past just like this, who have been, you know, Jimmy Savile is a perfect example, you know, who basically worked their way into these charities, like Sandusky as well, and use that position to manipulate children and to basically sexually abuse children. And that is horrifying. And it's hard for people to take in, because nobody really wants to hear this kind of news. But it's important that we begin to understand what's really going on. Not just that it's happening, but that it's being covered for. These people are allowed to do these things under the cover of their political clout, and they don't ever get held accountable. And to see this finally happen is good. I mean, it does show you that things are happening. And I know plenty of people will herald this as something that it's probably not, some kind of other, you know, larger scale thing happening. It may be, I don't know. But to see it happen in the first place, just show you to some degree that people are opening their eyes to this kind of thing. And that's a very positive step in the right direction. For the next story, coming out of RT.com, military-style training ban. Durham becomes first U.S. city to halt police exchanges with Israel. Durham City Council, North Carolina, has voted to abolish international exchanges with Israel, under which officers receive, quote, military-style training, something we've reported on in the past, which seems very odd. The council wants to prevent the, quote, militarization of law enforcement, also something we've touched on, which is very real in this country. I mean, it's shocking to see the kind of things they have in these very small towns, from tank-style military vehicles to grenade launchers in cities of like 300-400. I mean, and these are real cases, by the way. And it's like, what, you know, why would they ever need such kind of things? I mean, it's the literal militarization of the police force. And that's something that is multifaceted. Again, that's a whole other discussion to have, but this relates to it directly. Now, late on Monday, after a heated debate in the city council, the members voted 6-0 in what one of the activist groups, Jewish Voice for Peace, described as, quote, the first city to prohibit police exchanges with Israel. The group was one of those which pushed forward the move, together with the Durham to Palestine Coalition, a movement opposing police militarization in the U.S. and calling to stop supporting human rights abuses in Israel. Again, also something we've covered that's been ongoing, but it's been happening a lot recently and getting zero coverage. The activists launched a petition in the fall of last year, demanding that the city authorities immediately halt any such participation with Israeli forces. Quote, the council opposes international exchanges with any country in which Durham officers receive military-style training, since such exchanges do not support the kind of policing we want here in the city of Durham. Now, exchanges between U.S. and Israel law enforcement are common training practice organized by governmental bodies as well as NGOs and private companies. It appears that each city can make its own decision on the matter, however. But it's interesting that the point they make there is that this is a very common practice that people don't even realize. And I always think that's interesting to kind of fold in the idea that we've seen these odd kind of petitions and bills to allow, like, you're not allowed to criticize Israel. We even saw it during some of the hurricanes where they had to sign some kind of a document that said they wouldn't criticize Israel before they could get aid relief. And these are real stories. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but these are very real things happening. Now, it's important to note, however, that the mayor of Durham, Steve Schwiel, I thought you pronounced that, said that people were given, quote, completely false information that the city's police force has not been engaging in training with the Israeli military. So that's something that's important to note. Whether he's making that up, who knows? I mean, that's something we should further investigate. But the point stands at the end of the day. The larger point, which this drew my attention on, is that this thing does very much happen. Local police forces are in fact training with Israeli army, and that's very weird. And I think it's good to see this kind of thing happening, especially with all the human rights abuses we're seeing every day from Israel that no one seems to touch on. Meanwhile, we're bombing countries based on the false premise of human rights concerns. It's very, very Orwellian at the end of the day, but I like seeing this happen because I think it's a step in the right direction, especially coming from a country that openly kills people and just gets no, you know, just with impunity at the end of the day. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, Facebook is violating your privacy via facial recognition technology. On April 6th, a coalition of consumer privacy organizations led by the Electric Privacy Information Center filed a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission accusing Facebook of violating individuals' privacy via the company's facial recognition practices. The complaint focuses on changes to Facebook's policy, which went into effect early 2018, namely the ability to scan users' photos for biometric facial matches without consent. The organizations say that Facebook is deceptively selling the facial recognition technology to users by encouraging them to identify people in photographs. Quote, this unwanted, unnecessary, and dangerous identification of individuals undermines user privacy, ignores the explicit preferences of Facebook users, and is contrary to law in several states and many parts of the world. Now, this whole story is ongoing. I mean, it's almost not shocking for people to realize that Facebook and other social media outlets are completely using your information, in a lot of cases, against your wishes. And this is one that needs to stand out to us because clearly facial recognition is something that ties directly back to the government and military type ideas, and something that is very much being used for law enforcement all around the world, especially in places like China today. And this is very alarming to see as they build a literal Facebook of all of our faces. They call them face prints, and against our wishes. I mean, that's the point they make here, is that even if you're saying you don't want this thing to happen, somebody else is posting a picture of you, and then it's facial recognition from that picture because they say, I mean, there's all these weird little loopholes for it, but the point is that it violates your privacy rights. And not only that, it violates laws in many states that is taking place. So it's very interesting to see this as this Facebook story continues to compound. Like we saw the Cambridge Analytica story, which, you know, then, you know, Zuckerberg got up in front of Congress and lied to Congress, which is an actual crime, a federal crime, not perjury. He wasn't under oath, but it's called false statements. And the statute I'll include in the show notes, it is a crime to lie. It's a federal crime to lie in front of Congress, which he did. He claimed they weren't spying on you and using your microphones, which another interesting side note I talked about yesterday. A video from a gentleman doing a live test verified that Google was using, and Facebook for that matter, using your microphone to better enhance their advertising, which clearly that's using for many other purposes. But this, and there's also a story of the medical idea where it showed you that Facebook was planning and reaching out to hospitals to acquire our medical information to combine it with everything else they know. And that actually was pulled back after Cambridge Analytica story kind of blew up in their face. But now we're seeing that they're also using facial recognition against our will, to, and it just, it continues to compound. I mean, it's one more reason we need to stop using all these kind of social media outlets and find alternatives that aren't doing the same things. But even them, to some degree, might possibly end up doing them. Who knows? It's probably just a good idea to be aware of this. And just, I mean, a lot of ways, I think, to pull away from a lot of social media. But it's just, I think at the end of the day, it's all right to know this kind of thing is happening and be able to not allow it at the end of the day. But I think it comes down to whether the government wants to do it or not. That's really what matters. And the connections there between them are indisputable. Moving on to the next story, coming from one of our newest writers, Katie Harveston, and it's an excellent article that really highlights a problem that I think is something that needs to stand out. It's entitled, When Will America Wake Up and Tackle Its Homelessness Problem? Now, this article makes a lot of really excellent points, from the idea that the general wages have stayed basically stagnant while cost of living has just skyrocketed and the reasons behind that. But I want to highlight one specific point in this that really stood out to me. And as always, I highly recommend you read this entire article. But the point that she makes that really kind of stood out to me, something that we've kind of touched on before. Seattle spends $1.06 billion a year in a feigned effort to help the homeless, yet that money is used on programs that directly help companies and corporations profit from their destitution, medical visits, insurance, etc. While it would cost only $192 million a year to house and care for all of the homeless people in King County. Now, it's important to also understand that this in general, medical visits, insurance, these things are important. I mean, it's not like they don't matter, but the point is that if we're spending $1 billion a year here in this county or in this city, and while it could only cost like a tenth of that or more, but $192 million to basically solve the problem and care for them, it just seems very ridiculous. And that's the point that she makes in this article, that clearly this is about keeping money in the pockets of these people, the corporations involved here, instead of actually solving the problem, because there's an industry here created around these people. I mean, it's horrifying to see this take place. And it's just something that needs to continue to be very apparent, that it's not about solving these problems. It's about maintaining profitability in this regard, because a problem like this is clearly a big deal. And then all of a sudden you see industries kind of arise around the problem, maybe originally to actually try to solve it. But what happens is they end up becoming dependent on this problem for their industries. And we see this taking place all the time. And a lot of these aren't even just dependent. We're talking about medical insurance. I mean, these are things that clearly there's a lot of money coming in from this. It's, you know, coming from nonprofit organizations and things that are helping. But it's just to see the fact that it's such a small amount to actually solve the problem, yet they're spending way more than that just to keep it going, it blows my mind. We've touched on the fact that the UN has said numerous times that it would only cost $30 billion a year to end world hunger, right? I mean, to absolutely end world hunger, while we spend hundreds of billions of dollars for the military and even spend $700 billion for Saudi Arabia. I mean, just think about that. We could literally spend just a fraction of that and end world hunger. Yet we spend so much more on things that cause those problems, and even under the guise that we're doing those things to help the very people that are starving. It doesn't make any sense. And this is a microcosm of that problem, looking directly at Seattle and King County. But it's something we need to understand in the larger idea here, is that it's really not about helping people, and that has to begin to stand out to us. Moving on to the final story of the day, and it's something that I want to try to begin doing, because a lot of people really enjoyed my positive end of one of the last few episodes I did. Now, if and when I can, and as often as possible, I will try to make sure and end with a positive story, but I'm not going to seek out and find them just to do so, because it's important that I show you what's really going on. But when they stand out to me, and when it's something I do think is important, I will definitely include it. So for today's positive news story to end with, coming from collectiveevolution.com, artist replaces billboards with photos of the landscapes they're blocking. So this is a nice story about an artist that is essentially making artistic photos of the landscape and almost seamlessly putting them on these gigantic billboards to where it basically looks like the landscape. I mean, clearly you can still tell it's a billboard, but he's making a statement here with this. The idea that you're driving down what's supposed to be kind of like seamless landscape, and you're being bombarded with all these gigantic billboard ads, and it kind of takes away from the real idea of being out in the open like that. And so it's really nice to see it happening, and I think it's a nice statement that he's making, you know, and clearly they're paying for these. I mean, so it's coming out of his own pocket at the end of the day. But I think it's a nice step trying to make a point, and also just kind of keeping it nice again, you know, so you're avoiding all these obnoxious ads everywhere. Now, some have actually taken measures to remove them, which I think is ridiculous. But the project carries on and really fighting to bring back the at least the illusion of unfettered landscape. So I think it's a nice story to mention, and the fact that there are people out there trying to do things that, you know, that maybe not are political or politically oriented or really cause that much of a difference, but it's just doing something that he thinks is a positive step. And it really just goes to show you that we can all do things like that in our daily lives. Just small little measures that we think could lighten the day of other people and that could bring positive, you know, any kind of positivity in a world overrun today with such negativity in every regard that we can look at. And of course, all the things we talk about on the regular are a lot of negative things. But again, the point I made before I started this story is that sadly enough, most of the things going on today do have a lot of negative nature to them. And it's something that's why we're doing what we're doing. We're fighting to keep that positive nature here. We're fighting to keep those negative things away. We're trying to fight to bring back the kind of world that we want to live in. And that's always what we should be thinking about in all of this. But I mean, from all the things we talked about, I mean, from the homelessness issue to the manufactured events and blatant manipulation of what's going on in Syria, it should be more clear than ever that both what the government and the corporations who fund them essentially, or that control them, truly want or care about has nothing to do with helping people, helping Americans, or steering this country on a path to prosperity. We are lied to at every turn, manipulated with every broadcast, and sold subjugation and oppression as the answer to the very problems their selfishness has created. And worse yet, they are fully aware of this, yet they just do not care, apparently. So as always, throughout history, it is up to us, the people, to change things. But we must do so using critical thinking and open-mindedness and a willingness to see past false divisions. So I leave you with one of my favorite quotes, something that always kind of sticks with me in what I do every day. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or one of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.